If you missed the first hour of Better Lawns and Gardens, you missed how to create a friendly, bat-friendly habitat in your landscape. You can listen to the podcast on our brand new website, betterlawns.com, later today. And so we are going to go for the dirty word of the day.
That's right. And if you guys did miss that interview about the bats, you need to go back and listen to it because it was off the chain.
Yes, it was. Oh, yeah.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
And now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day is a combination of phrases today, witch's brew. So double, double, boil in trouble. Witches cackle as their cauldrons bubble. Spiders creep and black cats howl. Ghosts and spirits are on the prowl. So this three witches scene, which is Act 4, Scene 1 in Macbeth, has a lot of ingredients in their witch's brew. They have the fire burn, double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, fillet of a fenny snake in the cauldron boil and bake, eye of newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog, adder's fork and blind worm's sting, lizard's leg and owlet's wing, for a charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth boil and bubble. So these ingredients, where can we find them? Can we go to the store and buy them? So I researched the names. And so this is what is the ingredients in the witch's brew. Eye of newt refers to a mustard seed. Herbalists would often reference body parts when describing parts of plants. An eye is a seed, and mustard seeds are dark yellow like the eyes of some newts. Now, fillet of fenny snake is debated. It's possible this ingredient could be referring to a member of the arum family, which includes plants with nicknames like Jack in the Pulpit and snake's meat, which would fit with the idea of a fillet. Some other speculated identities of this ingredient include a leech, fenny meaning marshy or swampy, and leeches are snake-like swamp dwellers, or snake group, based on the name. A toe of frog refers to the bulbous buttercup. This yellow flower resembles most other buttercups, but it has a fat green bulbous stem. The froggy connection doesn't seem too big of a leap or a hop. Wool of bat, the two most commonly speculated identities of this ingredient are moss and holly leaves. Moss is a general name for clumpy plants that grow on and cover trees and rocks like wool. Mosses, like bats, also tend to be found in dark, sunless areas. Holly trees and shrubs can be found all over the world and have bat wing-like leaves on which red berries grow. Tongue of dog, this refers to hound's tongue, a highly toxic plant that features long, hairy stalks that can grow up to 4 feet tall. Clumps of purplish flowers can be found at the ends of the stems. Adder's fork. This snaky ingredient refers to the dog-tooth violet, which isn't technically a violet. It is commonly called the trout lily and is a small plant with delicate purple or yellow flowers that is beloved by honeybees and other pollinators. Blind worm sting is a source of speculation. It may be a poppy seed, knotwood, or wormwood. Poppies are sometimes referred to as blind eyes, and all poppies are poisonous, which would explain the sting. Knotwoods are bamboo-like weeds with small flowers that often invade other plants' territory. And wormwood is a plant with white or green stems and bulbous yellow flowers. Besides having a name that fits, wormwood has been used in traditional medicines. Lizard's leg refers to ivy, and owlet's wing is less clear. It's possible that it could refer to either garlic or ginger plants, and garlic is an herb related to onions that features a long stalk growing out of a white bulb. Scale of dragon could refer to Alocosia beginda, commonly known as dragon scale plant. True to the name, the leaves of this plant resemble large green dragon scales. Another possibility is a plant that fits the bill is tarragon, a leafy green herb found worldwide that is often referred to as dragon. A tooth of a wolf is speculated to either be wolfsbane or club moss. Wolfsbane, actually named aconitum, is a plant native to Europe that has distinct purple flowers. Its nickname comes from the fact that it is highly poisonous and was often used to kill feared predators such as wolves. Club moss, also called wolf's foot or wolf's claw, are herbs that have many spiny leaves. So when you're thinking and reading about Macbeth and the three witches in Act 4, then you think about all the plants that are going in this witch's brew. They had wonderful names. And this was kind of to protect the witch, her property.
Right.
So nobody else could make the ingredients. She knew exactly what it was going to be. So it protected her business. It also protected the humans who were idiots who would try and make it. They wouldn't know what it was
exactly.
And kill themselves with it. So we have a great show coming up for you. We have Stephen Biggs, Food, Garden, and Life Network. And he's going to be with us to tell us how to have a fun activity this fall. Stay tuned. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens if it's Saturday morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. There you go. Got there. I have a wonderful guest with us, and I get his newsletter, Food, Garden, Life newsletter, and he is fabulous with growing urban gardening, just like Dr. Gary Bachman. And so, good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Hey, Teresa. Great to be back. I'm fine, thanks.
Oh, well, it's so wonderful to have you back. Now, you have wonderful books, No Guff Vegetable Gardening, Growing Figs in Cold Climates, 150 of Your Gardening Questions Answered, Grow Figs Where You Think You Can't, and Grow Lemons Where You Think You Can't. And your legacy continues with your children because your wonderful daughter, Emma Biggs, she has Gardening with Emma, her book. And so congratulations on all of your writing. You do a wonderful job.
Thanks very much. I've had fun doing it.
Yeah, you have, and you bring me along, too, with it. And so you live in Toronto, Ontario, and your wife, Shelley, your teenage sons, Quinn and Keaton. And Keaton has a wonderful video blog where he creates delicious videos about cooking called Dirt to Dishes. I love that. And then, again, your co-host, Emma, your daughter, your 17-year-old daughter, she is amazing. She's a gardener and a garden communicator, and it seems like your whole family's life revolves around the outdoors activities and growing food. So what was your first hands-on gardening experience with your children? What did you do with them?
Oh, that's a great question. It was actually pretty simple. I got the kids watering, and kids love water, so just a little watering can to get them started, and they'll love that. But the other thing that my kids loved was I'd give them a little pail, a trowel, and they'd make mud. And what kid doesn't love mud? So for anybody thinking about gardening with kids, you can start with that. Simple.
That is very simple, and that would be a fun activity. And so your urban garden is amazing. I've seen photographs of it, and one day I'm going to get up there because my cousins live in Canada. I'm going to stop by. But tell us what you grow in your yard.
Well, so I have this suburban yard here in Toronto, Zone 5, and I've got lots of veggies, herbs, edible flowers, fruit, but I weave in all sorts of ornamentals too. So I'm a big believer in the edible landscape. So, but for me, I think what's really fun is trying to grow things that aren't supposed to grow here in Zone 5. So I have potted figs, potted olives, potted lemons. I've got kumquats. And then just the unusual, I've got a weird fruit called a medlar, which was lost and unpopular in medieval times.
Mm-hmm. It's a pear, right?
Apple variety.
Isn't it a pear, medlar?
Well, it's related to the pear, but it's so hard that you can't even bite into it before you let it soften. So you blet the medlars. There's a verb to blet, to soften them. And it's got this really interesting taste, almost custardy. So Ooh. It's a fun one. And that's the kind of thing I love to put in my garden.
That's wonderful. I love that. And so in your newsletter last month, I read your activity for a great party, a fall party, and I wanted to have you on. So this was about apple taste testing. So tell us what an apple taste testing party is.
Well, I think maybe think of a wine tasting to get this idea going. Think of how sometimes people will have wine events where you go and you taste all these different wines to try to pick out the flavors. Or I know my daughter and I did a chocolate tasting event once. So we're doing the same thing with apples, because apples, the flavor and the taste, the texture, it can vary a lot between different apple varieties.
And so what kind of characteristics would you find out? So your apple features, what would you ask questions about?
Well, good question. You can ask questions about how it looks, because there's different colors, shapes, sizes, even the skin texture. There's the smell. Some have some smell, some have lots of smell, some have no smell. There's the taste. And so here are some of the words that my family pulled out when we had our own apple tasting. And for one, actually, my son Keaton said, "It's like candy." And that apple he just tasted to him was like candy. The word tart, juicy, fragrant. Someone said, "Smells like flowers." Pineapple, tropical, crisp. So those are all words that came out from my family when we did this.
Wow, that's fun. So you arranged them all out. And what kind of steps did you take to have? What did you do in your party? How did it go?
Well, so what I recommend, if you're thinking of doing this, first you want to shine those apples so that they look beautiful. And get two of each variety, because one of them you'll slice up for people to taste. But you want people to be able to look at what that apple looks like, too. So get two of each variety. And then what we did is we cored one of each variety and sliced it and put it on a cutting board. And then, of course, we labeled it so people would know what apple is there. And you can also, a bit like wine tastings, you could put out water and crackers so that people can cleanse their palates between different apple varieties so that they can perceive some of those differences. So it can be very simple, just like that.
Well, I thought it was a wonderful idea to have it in fall. And here in Florida, we can grow so many different types of fruit trees that people don't know which one they like. So can this be done with any kind of fruit?
Oh, absolutely. You could do this. I'm thinking here in Ontario, we get lots of plums, for example. And there are so many different plums with so many different flavors. And so, yeah. Any fruit. I grow figs, as I was mentioning, and different flavors. Some are more berry-like, some are more date-like. And so you could certainly take this idea and use it for different fruit. And if you want to make it really fun for people, I think the key to anything like this is making it fun. Maybe get a whiteboard or an easel, and as people are shouting out words at you, you can write them down. Make a little drum roll before people take a bite out of each one. So make it as fun as you can, because that's what food can be, really fun, and it's such a good way to come together with other people.
Sure, and it's an activity a whole family could do or a neighborhood could do. And here in Florida, we could do it with avocados, because people don't know what kind of avocado they would like to have, or peaches, or citrus even. You could even do it with citrus with different types of oranges or the tangerines and nectarines. Do you like to grow nectarines?
Oh, I don't have any, but I love nectarines. That's a great idea. Maybe I need to come to Florida.
Oh, anytime, you come right on down here. So you produce two guides, two free guides. One is 20 small space food garden hacks, and then also grow figs where you think you can't in cold climates. Now, so you can, just so that you can get the Food Garden Life newsletter that you produce. So your tips and guides for the North and Canada, which are colder climates, but the small space hacks work in Florida. So how can people find these great offers?
Thanks for asking. If you go to my website, which is foodgardenlife.com, all one word, foodgardenlife.com, and there's a place on the website to get those guides. And I also, this morning, I put on my front page that article about doing an apple tasting. So if this idea jumped out at you and you want some tips, check that out. And I also have a link on there to an apple tasting wheel that my friend Susan put up after she ran an apple tasting. And so if you're trying to think of some of these words that you could use at a tasting event, you can find that there too.
That's wonderful. And so so some of the Garden Life newsletter, so Food Garden and Life newsletter, tell us what they can find in it each month.
Well, I include my newest articles about home food gardening. That's really my passion, is growing food at home, whether you have a suburban lot or even if you have just a condo balcony. It's all about having fun growing food, making it easy and doable. So I have articles about that. And then also my podcast with my daughter, Emma, who you mentioned. She's just an avid gardener now. She grows over 100 tomato varieties in our Toronto yard. And so when we do podcasts, I put those in the newsletter too.
That's amazing. So now, Keaton and Emma are into gardening. What does Quinn do?
Quinn is not a gardener, at least not at this point in his life. The last time I sent him out to pick currants in the garden, he complained about it being child labor. So he has his own specialties. At this point, gardening isn't one of them. And that's okay. All kids are different.
Sure, that is great. And so how old is Keaton? Because I love his videos. He does a really great job. How old is he?
Keaton is 14 right now, and Keaton's specialty right now is figs. Keaton is my fig apprentice. He loves figs.
That is amazing. I love that. And so Emma, Gardening with Emma, she's on with you on Food, Garden, and Life Network, and you do a podcast. How often?
We just are finishing our summer break, but we podcast weekly.
Okay, great. And where can they hear all of this?
And if you go to foodgardenlife.com, and you can also find Emma at emmabiggs.ca if you're interested in seeing her great tomato pictures.
She is wonderful. Well, I'll tell her I said hello. Thank you so much for coming on today. It's a great fall activity, apple taste testing party, or we can do it with any fruit we have can find here in Florida. Thank you so much, Stephen. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Teresa.
All right. Bye-bye. He is just great. I love him. I love his newsletter. And, if you do not know what kind of fruit tree you want, do a taste testing party.
Oh, I love that. And that was such a great idea. And also, just even if you wanted to know the different varieties, especially apples, like people think there's just like the green and the red, but there's so many varieties. And that's actually good. We can do that here in Florida, too.
We're coming up with citrus time coming up here in the wintertime. There'll be so many citrus varieties available, avocados and the peaches. And then you could also do it with vegetables, too. Different kinds of beans, different kinds of lettuces, everything. Great idea, having a family taste testing party. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, I'm Teresa Watkins. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. If you have a gardening question, you can give me a call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text at 23680. We'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Steve in Apopka. Good morning, Steve. How can I help you?
Hi, Teresa. I would like to start some shade trees, and I'm looking for advice on variety of trees that will grow well in this area.
Okay, for shade, and is it a large open area and you don't have shade, or you do have shade and you want to grow underneath it?
No, it's an open area.
It's an open area. Okay, so yes. Plants that provide shade, you would need them to be full sun plants to grow in that area, and then the shade would come along eventually. So, you know,
yes.
Quick-growing trees, I would say, would be elm trees, hickory trees there in Apopka would do very well. And then also, too, you can do oak trees. Oak trees grow fast, especially the Chamard ones or the live oak ones that will produce a lot of shade. And those trees, they will grow very rapidly the first 5 to 10 years, and then they kind of slow down a little bit. But the trees, I can send you a list, a publication of all the trees that you can grow in your area. So if you'd like to email me at betterlawns.com, Steve, I can send it to you and give you a whole bunch of variety, okay?
I will do that. I thank you for your help.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. I love the idea of planting trees, but you got to make sure you have enough area. When I see these zero lot line houses and they have to put 5 trees on them because of, you know, building requirements, that just drives me up the wall.
Yeah, and I also think that I have done this in the past where you either see really beautiful shrubs and that you would like to have, or trees, and you're like, okay, so you plant them right there on the line instead of going, okay, this is going to potentially be 5 foot in the next 5 years, and it's going to tear down the power lines, your fencing. So, yeah, research how big your tree potentially could get around. And then if you plant too many in one area on certain types of trees, they won't get as big, too.
Right, they get crowded, and they need that they're going to compete for the water, the nutrients, and even the airspace. The air circulation is so important around trees. And then I would prefer to see the plantings, and in my landscape designs, I do this, is you plant on the outside and come in. Not everything is up against the foundation where they're not going to get good air, so they're going to get disease issues. Or you keep the foundation of your home really wet because you're watering that foundation. And instead, just bring it out and have a nice yard where you have a view from your inside. You know, sometimes we plant so close to the house that we can't see anything but the grass.
Right.
And the mailbox out by the road, the driveway. So plant outside and come in.
Yeah.
And that is, to me, a nicer design aesthetic than just planting all the way around the foundation.
It's so funny. I kind of figured that out. Shrek, my husband, he tried telling me, let's not plant these shrubs so close to the one house that we had. I'm like, no, it's gonna, you know, it needs to be there. And he's like, okay. So after they died the next year because they didn't get water, where it could have had natural water running off the roof.
That's it.
Rocket science.
It is, you know. And so I always plant 2 feet outside of the foundation where they can get the natural rainfall. The eave of the house doesn't, you know, keep them from getting water. That's so important. And plus, the wetter your foundation, the more susceptible you're going to be to termites.
Ooh, yes.
And so if you're watering your foundation plants all the time, or your irrigation is hitting your house, it's not the mulch that you have around the house that's causing or attracting termites. It's the water.
Ooh,
and so, you know, they need the moisture. So keeping your foundation as dry as possible is very good here in Florida. Let's go to our text messages. Good morning, Teresa. At what temperature do I need to bring my Mexican fence post cactus plant inside? Well, I'm assuming it's really tiny, and so if it, you know, you can bring it inside. I would say that it can stay outside all year round. I don't think you're going to have a problem with it here in Florida. Where are you? Let's see. You're in Orlando, Nick. Okay, so, I don't see that you even have to bring it inside. I would just say that you want to make sure that, you know, you're keeping it watered but not too wet, and then fertilizing it regularly so that it's healthy, and it should be able to be just fine. I don't see any kind of freezes that are going to really be damaging, because they usually can take temperatures down to 20 degrees, you know, 25 degrees, and we rarely have a winter that's below that for long periods of time. We have had it in the past, but I don't think you're going to see it this year. So I think it'll just be fine outside. I don't think you need to bring it in, Nick. Great question. And so you do say you're from Winter Park. So thank you so much for listening, Nick, and texting. My night blooming cereus is blooming like crazy. Oh. Have you ever had one?
No.
Oh, I've got to get. I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna divide mine up and give it to you. These blooms are so beautiful. And again, they can be pollinated by bats. Mm-hmm. And it is blooming right now. It's in a hanging basket. And it's just hanging down. And I will post pictures of it. But I'll get you a leaf and you can plant it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so we can do it. Sharing. That's what gardeners do. We love to share.
Oh, you share a lot. You really do. Teresa always thinks about me and always brings me in a plant. And I'm just so blessed to have all these little cool plants. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. That's all the beauty of gardening is sharing and seeing beautiful things and wanting others to have it. So 1-888-455-2967, or if you're in, you'd like to text us, 23680. And you should be just fine. Someone asked for a recipe for eggnog. So go to betterlawns.com and email me, and I will send it to you. I love my eggnog, and just it's just wonderful. And then also, too, we are getting into November, and this is a beautiful time of the year to plant. So what can you be planting? Well, with bulbs, African irises, amaryllis, anemones, bulbine, crinums, day lilies, and rain lilies, and ranunculus, society garlic, spider lilies, and narcissus. If you'd like those bulbs, refrigerate them now. Dutch iris, tulips, daffodils, hyacinths, and they need a cold treatment of at least 12 to 16 weeks before flowering. So you can start those right now, too, as well. Like to give us a call, 1-888-455-2967. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. You still have time to get your gardening question in today, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. Let's go to Reggie in Melbourne. Good morning, Reggie. How can I help you?
I have about a 2-foot lemon tree in a pot and that was gifted to me. And I was wondering, should I get it in the ground right now? Should I wait till a different time of year?
Okay.
And also, when I planted my previous citrus that unfortunately lasted about 5 or 6 years and died from greening, they told me to, you know, put a bunch of special potting soil, more organic than, you know, just the sand. And do I need to do anything if I'm putting it in the ground?
Right. Okay. So a couple of things. It's two feet tall. Is it a grafted citrus tree or is it one from seed?
I am not sure.
Okay. So you didn't buy this one from the store or a nursery or anything?
No. It was a friend.
Okay. All right. So okay, that's fine. And so I want you to go ahead and wait this year before you put it in the ground. Let's go ahead and plant it next year when it has, you know, a good 8 to 10 months of warm weather before it gets, you know, a frost. Okay, so let's wait until it's a little bit taller. I want you to... Pardon me? I'm sorry,
no. Somebody else walked up.
Oh, no, that's okay. All right. And so wait this winter time. Don't plant it right now. And then that way you can go ahead and plant it next spring. Now, it's not because citrus trees can't take winter. They can. But I just think it's a little too small and you can kind of just keep it growing while you're just this winter time. That'll be just fine. That would be my preference if I had it. But now do not worry about sand and do not fill a lot of organic material around your citrus tree. As you know, citrus trees grow all over the state of Florida at one time and in just bare sand. They love good drainage. And so it's not important or it's not as necessary for citrus trees to have really rich organic soils that stays wet a long time. Okay, so I would just say, you know, plant it out in your yard. You know, where do, what kind of soil do you have, Melbourne? Do you have sandy soils? Do you have full sun?
Where I had my other plants, it was pretty much full sun. In fact, I need to dig them out because they've been dead a couple of years.
Okay, I would prefer you not to plant in that area just with them if there's, you know, if they died from citrus greening. Not that they can get it from the soil, but that the insects may be around. So I would move it over to another area if you could that has full sun and then plant something else there where the old citrus trees were.
Should I put it in a bigger pot now?
No. I mean, is it root bound? I mean, how long has it been in that pot?
I've had it since September. It's been in there since, you know, probably a few months before that.
No, I think it's fine. Unless you can see the roots coming out, you know, can slip it out of the pot. And if you can't see the roots or the roots are just very, you know, just a little bit of roots, it'll be fine until next winter. Not a problem.
All right. Thank you, Teresa.
You're welcome, Reggie. Thank you. Let me know how you do. Let's go to Bobby in Melbourne. Let's talk about your amaryllis. What's going on?
Hey, thank you. Such good points this morning. My amaryllis, like, they're in pots, and they bloom before, usually every year they do. This year they didn't, but I noticed around me, now I'm near the beach, all of them that I saw, they all bloomed early and super, super prolific.
Okay.
But mine, not one flower.
Huh.
Right there, baby. Yeah.
How long have you had them in the pot?
This pot...
Yeah.
Probably the second year.
Okay.
I transferred them all together.
Okay. And so then, how often do you fertilize it?
I do liquid seaweed probably every 3 months. And then I do the basic fertilizer.
Okay.
Maybe 4 times a year.
Okay.
So,
well, it sounds like, you know, you're doing everything correct. But, you know, sometimes... plants take a holiday. They take a year off. And so you just transplanted them, what, you said 2 years ago?
Yeah. They bloomed that year.
Yes. Okay. But, so I think maybe they just took the time off, and I would see what they do next spring if they didn't bloom for you this year. Wait one more year, and then what kind of soil are they in?
It's a mix. It's I do a bagged soil, but
okay.
I also mix with some own my own stuff, sand and whatnot as
okay.
well.
That's fine.
So it's not too wet.
Yeah, no. I appreciate that. We really had a very dry year so far this year. So that may be one of the things that maybe didn't get enough water. And so I would just make sure that you're, you know, keep on fertilizing like you are, make sure it has water and see what it does next year. And then it's not too root bound, is it? Or, you know, it's not really full in the pot, is it?
No.
Okay. It just may have taken a year off with the transplanting. It was already, you know, scheduled. It already had enough nutrients where it was going to bloom that year when you transplanted it. And so now coming back, I would probably change the seaweed fertilizer out and not do that one and use blooming fertilizer. Okay. So you want something with a high middle number, a high phosphorus, and give it that's going to give it the nutrition it needs to produce flowers. Okay.
That could be. I mean, it's got great greenery.
Yeah, well, that's what seaweed does. It makes it grow leaves. And so it just may be focusing on that, and you just want to redirect its attention to growing flowers, and you do that by giving it a high phosphorus fertilizer.
Got it.
Okay? Let me know
Thank
when they
so
bloom
much.
Again. You're welcome, Bobby. Thank you for listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I appreciate it. So John in Tallahassee has a really great question, Lizzie. He says, how can I train my Peggy Martin Rose to grow on a 6-foot privacy fence? And so Peggy Martin Rose, and I never knew about them until Gary Bachman came and he brought us, Lizzie, roses. And the Peggy Martin Rose is the rose that survived the Hurricane Katrina disaster. And it was underwater for 2 weeks, the Peggy Martin Rose, and it survived and it continued to grow. And so Gary brought us two. And so I know about them now, and they're beautiful roses and doing very well. And so what you want to do, John, is the main stalks, okay, the main rose canes that produce the heavy flowers, you want them to be directed straight up. So if it's going up against a fence, and if it's not a slatted fence where you can literally, you know, weave it in and out of it, then I would either put a trellis behind it so that you can attach the Peggy Martin Rose to it with the main stems going straight up, or you can use a fishing line and put that up the fence, you know, horizontally. Nope, vertically. I'm going right? Vertically goes straight up, right? Okay. My Tony is laughing at me. I can tell right now. And then attach the lines, stems, the rose canes to the wire, and that way you'll direct it up. It will grow that tall, and it will get even taller than that. So great question, John. Just direct the main rose cane straight up, and you'll see that it does beautifully. So JAC in Cocoa Beach says, my pepper annual or perennial, and your bell pepper is an annual. It will grow several years. Tony will tell you he hates to throw peppers away, and so he keeps them for a couple of years. But they don't produce as well in later seasons, and so they're just inexpensive and enough to just, you know, start with new ones every year. They're considered annuals, but they will last a couple of years. And the fruit is all gone. The leaves are falling off. Leave them for next season or remove to compost. Remove to compost. We vote, Lizzie and I voted, and we say put it in the compost pile.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, JAC. And I'd like to thank Jim Davis, who is at the University of Florida Gator Bulldog game up in Jacksonville. He called in this morning and told us how to create a bat-friendly neighborhood. And so we do appreciate that, and it's a really great idea. If you missed the hour, go back and listen to it on our podcast. And then a big thank you to Stephen Biggs, our friend up in the Canadian area there in Toronto, who has a great idea for a fall party, even here in Florida, the apple taste testing party for your family and friends to determine what kind of apples you want. Or you can do it with citrus, you can do it with avocados, you can do it with papayas and mangoes, and just decide what kind you like and get several varieties. He has it, all the tips will be on his Food Garden Life Network newsletter and webpage. And I will have it on our Facebook page too as well. Thank you so much. Thank you, Lizzie, very much. I appreciate it. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Make sure you go to our website, WFLAOrlando.com, because you never know when we're giving away $1,000 weekdays 9 times. Go to WFLAOrlando.com and check out our contest page.